Warning, this podcast contains spoilers and explicit language. Listener discretion is advised.
It's a few movies, take a few notes.
You will respond.
What's up, Goreheads, and welcome to another episode of the Extreme Horror Replay Podcast. If you follow us on Instagram, you may have noticed in my stories that I asked some of our followers to come up with a disgusting movie, a vile movie, something that they normally wouldn't watch or normally wouldn't recommend. But the only caveat to them suggesting a movie was that they had to come on the podcast and talk about it themselves. So one of our first responses was from a gentleman named Gaz. He is from the UK, and he actually runs his own podcast, The Bloodshed. So I'm going to introduce Gaz as our first Insta-guest on the Extreme Horror Replay Podcast. Gaz, how you doing?
I am very well. How are you?
I am great. Kind of sweaty and sultry over here in the U.S. right now. We're going through a bit of a heat wave, so.
It's been pretty warm here the last few days as well, actually.
Yeah, so as I said just a little bit ago, you have your own podcast, the Bloodshed Podcast. Why don't you tell me a little bit about that?
Yeah, as everyone with podcasts, we're into horror films. Let's talk about horror films. Didn't know if it was going to go anywhere at the start, and then it's just kind of got more followers and stuff and just carried on going. And one of the things that I had with starting it was that I've always been a horror fan, but there's so many horror films I just haven't seen. And I thought by doing this, this forces me to watch a new horror film every week,
right?
Basically. And at the moment, yeah, it's fucking great. I've watched so many horror films. We've been going just over a year now, and in that time watched so many horror films, and most of which I'd never seen before. So yeah, it's really, really good. I can't see us stopping anytime soon.
It is a fun way to discover new films, that's for sure.
Yeah, it is. And like, it's a thing that I've done before. You know, we'd have friends around and we'd watch a film and then just sort of sit and chat about it afterwards. So it's kind of just doing that same thing that I would have been doing anyway.
Yeah. You know, you mentioned that, you know, you've always been a fan, and I didn't get into horror until I was maybe 10 or so. And it was just, I mean, because I come from a Christian household. I'm still a Christian now, but horror was just one of those things that never, you know, it was never really on TV. I mean, we're not like, you know, strict religious or anything like that. But, you know, I do come from a Christian background, and horror was just one of those things that was never like really on, you know, the TV or anything like that. It was always MASH and, you know, 227 or whatever the hell was on back then. So you say you've always been a fan of horror. What originally got you into horror?
I feel like I've told this story a few times recently to different people. I think it was, so I had like a friend who had an older brother who had a VHS of, I can't remember which one it was, but it was a Nightmare on Elm Street.
Yeah.
And I don't know which film it was, Nightmare on Elm Street. And we never watched it, but I remember looking at the cover for it and stuff and thinking, what the fuck is this? Like, burnt up man with the fucking knife fingers. And, you know, this was when I was, I don't know, eight or nine maybe.
Uh-huh.
And then one night, like, I don't know, maybe a year later or something, like channel flicking through film channels and seeing Friday the 13th.
Yeah.
And I thought Friday the 13th was Freddy Krueger.
Oh, okay.
So I was like, oh yeah, Friday the 13th. Yeah, that's that one I remember that matey's brother had with the guy with the knife fingers. Like, yeah, I'm going to watch that.
Right.
And then watch the whole of Friday the 13th thinking, when the fuck is the guy with the fingers going to show up? He never did. But yeah, then I was just like, but this was actually really good. I didn't know this sort of thing existed. But I was already watching kind of more adult films at that point anyway, you know, action films and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Not just kids' films. So my eyes had already been open to that sort of stuff. It was just not horror. But then, yeah, so that was it really. Friday the 13th was my gateway.
Yeah.
But it was by way of Nightmare on Elm Street.
And yeah, see, so, well, I said horror was never really on TV, but I would always watch the ninja movies and, you know, the action movies and things like that. And then the movie that actually got me into horror was actually Predator. You know, that came out in 87. I think I saw it for the first time. It was definitely on VHS, so probably 88, maybe late 88. And I would have been, you know, 10, maybe 11 years old. And I've only told this story a few times, but seeing those the skinned bodies hung upside down and Mac getting his head wasted by the Predator, that fucked me up. But it flipped a switch. And, you know, from that point on, it was like, okay, I was terrified of this, but now I need to see more. So that's the movie for me that, you know, got me into the horror genre. And I mean, technically, it's, I guess you could call it horror, but it's more action sci-fi horror. But yeah, that
yeah, one... there's definitely some like specific scenes at least that are very horror influenced. Like you say, finding the body strung up and like the you know, being stalked through the jungle and stuff.
Yeah, exactly. So okay, so now that we've gotten all the formalities out of the way, again, I asked the question: give me a disgusting movie, a vile movie, but you have to come on and. Come on the Extreme Horror Replay and talk about it. And you suggested the 2010 version of I Spit on Your Grave. Now, what made you think of this movie?
I was trying to think of, well, do you know what? When people say like the most violent, most brutal films you can think of, the first thing that comes to my head is always a Serbian film. Mm-hmm. But I didn't want to watch that again.
Right.
I saw it once and that was enough. So I was like, no, I'm not doing that. And I was thinking of like, what is brutal? And then, yeah, the 2010 remake of I Spit on Your Grave is one that just stuck in my head. I'd only seen it once before. And I think I watched it quite soon after release.
Uh-huh.
But I just remember it kind of leaving a bit of an imprint.
Yeah. You know, Nancy and I, we did cover the original a few months ago. And it definitely leaves you with a taste in your mouth. I think this one, as compared to the original, I think the violence is stepped up a little bit more. The revenge aspect of it is stepped up a little bit more.
So I was just going to say that, because I've seen the original a long time ago, and I think what drew me to that was the fact that it was banned in so many countries for so long or something.
Yes, it was.
And I remember watching that, and I think probably not long before the remake came out. So when the remake did come out, I was like, oh, I want to see this and see if they've made it even. Obviously, the original was banned. What have they done to this one now in modern times?
Right.
Was kind of what drew me to it at the time.
And I think the original is on the Video Nasties, or was anyway.
Right.
So, yeah. I mean, we're going to dig into this one here in just a minute, but 2010's I Spit on Your Grave.
What's a pretty little thing like you doing out here all alone?
Shut her up!
Please. Forgive me, Father, for I will sin. It's date night.
It does have a 6.3 on IMDb, and actually I didn't look up what the original had, but I imagine it's probably right around that. So, okay, I mean, we're going to dive in, and you just, I'll run the plot, you just jump in wherever you feel necessary.
Yeah, that's fine.
Starts out with Jennifer. She's driving on her way to the country. You quickly learn that she's a writer from New York, and she's looking for peace and quiet at a secluded cabin so she can work on her next novel. She pulls in for gas, and you know, they always overdo this trope about, you know, the good old country boys and the you know, they're kind of, I don't even know how you describe them. Like, I mean, you can tell right away that they're going to be, like, the bad guys, you know, but, like, they're just... They're almost overdone in their country boyness, you know what I mean?
Yeah, you're spot on. In fact, that's like the first problem I had with this film, and I had quite a lot of problems with this film upon rewatching it. But the fact that it's just that kind of stereotypical thing, like, oh, people that live out in the country have to be like fucking, yeah, like country boys, like rednecks and they're all fucking sleazy and they're all dirty and all they want to do is sit around drinking and stuff. And it's just like, yeah, it's so stereotypical. And I think it's just painting an unfair picture that everyone from like that part of the world is like that and is a fucking rapist.
Yeah. And I think it was Louisiana, if I recognize the plate.
Yeah, that's a bit of trivia that I read, actually, was the fact that to try and prevent giving like any particular like state a bad name, they specifically didn't name where it was, but they didn't think to change the license plates on the cars, so they are all Louisiana plates.
Okay. All right. Well, I didn't know that, but that's kind of cool. So Jennifer pulls up, she goes to get gas. Johnny, who is the ringleader of the group, Stanley, Andy, and Matthew, who you'll meet a little bit later, Johnny tries to put the moves on Jennifer, and he flubs it horribly. He trips over a bucket of water or windshield washer solvent or whatever. You know, you can tell right away that he's embarrassed, and he's obviously pissed. So, you know, she ends up driving off, gets to her cabin, and immediately gets to start writing. And then one of the things that you notice is that when she gets to the cabin, she's got boxes and boxes of booze and wine and stuff like that. And she's only got, at least you only see, one little suitcase of clothes and her computer and stuff like that. So it almost looks like she brought more alcohol than she did clothing.
She's a fucking author, though, right? That's what they do. They just drink and they write.
Drink and write, and, you know, if you're Stephen King, do a little cocaine, but...
Exactly. I kind of buy into that, though, the idea of, like, go and get away for, you know, a few weeks, months, or whatever, and fucking, you know, if you're just sat on your own, you're doing nothing else, you could easily get through a bottle of wine a day.
Probably.
Or more, so...
Yeah, if you're secluded and you're just trying to think and get into your thoughts, then yeah, I guess it makes a little sense. So as she's writing, she's sitting out on the porch and she somehow spills wine on herself. She goes back into the cabin and she's trying to scrub off the wine, which the wine on her clothes looked more like, it didn't look like wine, I know that. So whatever it looked like, it did not look like wine, but... She's standing there in her bra and her underwear, and...
Yeah, one thing I thought here was that was she wearing a dress? I didn't really pay attention to what she was wearing, but then suddenly she had, like, no bottoms on either. And I was like, well, if she spilled wine on her top, did she also take her jeans off? Or was she wearing a dress and it just all came off in one? Or, I don't know, it's just like, oh, right, she's nearly completely naked now, okay, sure.
I think it was a long sweater.
Right.
Because I did notice her big, ugly Ugg boots... So I think she was just wearing like a long sweater that came down maybe like mid-thigh.
Okay, that would make sense.
Yeah. So you see Jennifer, and you kind of see her from the outside of the cabin, and she's standing in her bra and underwear at the sink, and she's washing off her clothes. And then the view switches from the outside of the cabin to what you can obviously tell is like a video camcorder.
Yeah.
So somebody is... filming her from the outside of the cabin, and you know, you can kind of subtly hear like heavy breathing, and you know, I think they even make a comment, you know, oh, that's, you know, that's the money shot or whatever, something like that. But
something I thought was funny is this camera works all over the place. It like zooms right in on her ass and it's covered in knickers and that, and it's just like the framing's all bad. But then later when they watch the tape back, one of them says to... It's Stanley, isn't it, that's recording?
Yeah.
One of the other ones says to him, like, oh, that's really good camera work. I was like, no, it fucking wasn't.
Well, I mean, as you said earlier, they are country bumpkins, so...
Yeah, they have to be stupid, of course. They have to be sleazy. They have to be rapists. They have to be basically alcoholics because they're drinking... Yeah, all the stereotypes are there.
Yeah, exactly. So, the next morning, she goes for a run, and she sees this... abandoned cottage or cabin or something, like kind of buried back in the woods.
Chekhov's cabin, right?
Right. Yeah. Okay.
I mean, it's Chekhov, like, there's no reason for her to find this cabin. There's no reason for it to be there, but it comes up later in the film so that they've had to sort of shove it in there now just so that it makes sense when she goes back there later.
Gotcha. Yep. Yeah. Okay. I'm following you now. She goes back to her cabin or cottage, whatever it is. She's getting ready to take a shower. For some reason, the toilet won't flush, the water won't drain, and everything. So, of course, what does she do? She drops her phone in the toilet. No, I'm sorry. She makes the phone call first and calls a plumber or somebody, and then she drops the toilet or the phone in the toilet. So, you know, obviously she's all in a tizzy about her phone, And then Matthew, who is the fourth in the group, shows up. And you can kind of tell right away that he's maybe a little bit on the slower side, a little mentally challenged.
Yeah, it definitely has some kind of learning disability.
Right. He ends up fixing the plumbing, and she plants a big kiss on his cheek or something like that. And, you know, of course, being...
No, I think I'm pretty sure it's on the lips.
Was it on the... Okay. It may have been.
Yeah, I remember thinking his reaction was fully justified. Like, that came out of nowhere. She's, like, so excited. Like, I don't know, maybe it's because she's fucking drunk from drinking wine all fucking day and she's stoned because she's smoking joints and stuff. But, like, she just goes, oh, thank you, so excited. Gives him this massive kiss on the lips. And he's like, well, all I did was fix the fucking toilet. I'm a plumber. That's what I do.
Right.
Like, this is a bit over the top sort of thing. Yeah. And I kind of felt that for him. Like, yeah, why did she do that?
And I got to imagine that she could probably tell that he was, you know, a little challenged or disabled.
Yeah.
So in the next scene, you see Johnny, Andy, and Stanley. And again, we go back to your you know, stereotypical call out. They're sitting around a riverbank or whatever, and they're fishing. They're smoking, you know, smoking and drinking beers and just having a good old time there out by the water. I didn't understand the game they were playing. I know they were, like, bashing fish heads in or something like that. And I guess in order to, like, you know, I know you guys don't play baseball over there in the UK, but I guess cricket maybe would be somewhat similar. But
no, I mean, I know the basic rules. Like, we have rounders and softball that are, like, you know, more party games. But yeah, so you get like first base, second base, third base, home run or whatever. And I think one of them says like you only get a home run if you make their guts come out their mouth or something.
Yeah, something like that. So I don't know exactly what the rules of this game are.
The idea is you catch a fish, you put it on the ground and you beat it with a baseball bat. If it in one hit, whatever happens to it, if you get his guts to come out his mouth, you get a home run. But like, I guess this is just showing that they've all got a sadistic side right from the get-go.
Probably. And I mean, that's a fair way to go about telling that or showing that part of their lives.
To be fair, the film doesn't do bad in setting things up like that. The same thing that, like, not only the meeting with Matthew, not only does that kind of kick off the rest of the event. You know, if Matthew hadn't had to come to fix the plumbing, then nothing else in the film would have happened.
Well,
right.
Yes,
but,
exactly.
But also, it did the same thing of because she dropped her phone now doesn't work, so she can't call for help.
Which is very convenient.
Yeah, so they did well of setting up those two things in one scene, you know. So,
as we said, Johnny and the boys are playing this fish game. Matthew comes walking up, and he's making comment, or Johnny is making comments, or I'm sorry, the other two, Andy and Stanley, are making comments about Jennifer and how she embarrassed Johnny, and you know, like just brushed him off, blew him off, whatever. And Matthew comes showing up. And apparently, Andy and Stanley already knew that Matthew had gotten a kiss from Jennifer because they start telling Johnny about how, Matthew got to first base or whatever. He got a kiss from Jennifer on the mouth. And so they start making
the thing, because this is where Stanley's showing them the video footage that he got of Jennifer in her underwear.
Right.
The idea is that, obviously, we know it was him that was stalking outside her house. So when he says that, like, she kissed Matthew, we just assume that he was back there outside watching her the following day as well.
Yes, exactly. Yep, you're right. So they're making all these creepy comments and they're, you know, just like you said, they're being skeevy. And so Jennifer now back at her cabin, and it's now nighttime.
It's worth mentioning, I think, sorry, while they are still sat there by the river chatting and stuff, basically Stanley and Andy are winding Johnny up saying that, like, you know, she wasn't having any of you, yet she kissed Matthew. So Johnny's getting all jealous. And he starts saying, like, oh, I could have any girl any fucking time I want. And then, like, saying, like, oh, she's just a whore. She's just trying to show off on that. So he basically talks the rest of them into the fact that, like, she's just a piece of shit and that they should go there and rape her, basically. And that's not said at the time.
Right.
But it's basically him, and it's all just because of his jealousy that she wasn't interested in him, yet she kissed Matthew.
Which, yeah, that's a fair observation. Well, yeah, you know, because you can tell, like you said, Johnny, you can tell he's obviously getting more and more upset about the fact that even just a kiss, you know, for kissing or for fixing his plumbing or her plumbing, even just a kiss set off Johnny. And like you said, Andy and Stanley, yeah, were both making, you know, pushing him on, egging him on, kind of riling him up. So now it's evening and there's a knock on the door. or is this where the bird shows up, I think, or the dead bird?
It's a bird first. She hears a bang, and she looks out the side of the door, and there's a dead bird on the ground. So I think it's supposed to be implying that the bird just flew into the window, which to be fair, does happen. I have witnessed that.
Yeah, and I kind of
got the impression that they're making her think that's what happened, where really they've killed a bird and then just thrown it at the window.
Well, that's what I think, because it does come back a little bit later towards the revenge part. So Johnny, Andy, and Stanley, and I think Matthew was with them at the time. So the four of them come into her cabin, and this is where the shit really starts to kind of like escalate. You know, they're forcing her to drink more alcohol. And I really didn't understand this show me your teeth, you're my show horse kind of thing. I mean, maybe it was
just a power trip, but it starts off a bit slower than that, because I think first Johnny's there, and then Andy comes in from the other room. And then I think it's Stanley comes down from upstairs, and he's like holding up one of her bras in front of him. So the first thing is obviously not just the invasion of privacy that they've come into her, what is essentially her home where she's staying, but then they've already been through her things, you know, her personal, like her underwear. That's like, you know, it's one thing coming into the house, that the underwear thing's like another level of that, and then it's only going to get worse and worse from there.
Well, right. The invasion of privacy is, like you said, it's just another level of intimidation and, you know, instilling that fear in her. And I would like to know, though, how they got upstairs without her hearing them. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it doesn't. Yeah.
So unless,
it doesn't make sense.
Yeah, unless like one of them boosted her or boosted the other upstairs, and then, you know, she just happened to have the window open. But
it's a small, you know, so like all wooden floors and stuff. It's a big open, like the upstairs isn't like a whole other level, is it? It's more like a mezzanine type thing.
Yeah, just
where
like
he comes down from, because they've got this like big, big high ceilings in like the sort of sitting room area. So
yeah.
If someone came in up there, she would have heard it, definitely. She would have heard footsteps.
I would think so. I mean, it's just like a loft or something like that, so. Or as you say, a mezzanine. So they're forcing her, you know, to do all these, like, degrading acts. You know, she's got to drink the alcohol. They force her to, still, I don't really get it, but, like, I think it's just a way of degrading her. You know, show me your teeth, you're my show horse kind of thing. They force her, Johnny's got a handgun, and they force her to fellate it, or, you know, give it a blowjob or whatever. And I think Andy also had a bottle of whiskey or vodka or something. And you know, he was holding that down by his crotch and kind of forcing her to, you know, to fellate that as well. Somehow she gets a hold of the bottle, cranks Andy in the knee, and, you know, is finally able to, like, get up and run off. So she runs into the woods. She runs into the sheriff and the cabin caretaker. Now, one thing I did notice was that there was a very quick shift in the time of day, because when they come in, it's nighttime. And then when she goes off running, it's like dusk. Or not dusk, but what's the opposite of dusk?
Dawn.
Dawn,
Dawn. Yeah, it's getting light. this whole bit, because there is like a line in there which kind of disproves that even further when... during this whole kind of psychological torture scene, one of the things she says to them is like, look, my boyfriend's going to be here soon.
You're right.
And Johnny says like, well, there's not much of the night left. If he was coming tonight, he would have been here by now.
Oh, okay.
I get the idea that it's late at night, but I don't get the impression that it's like 5 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, see, I was thinking...
She wouldn't still be up drinking at that time. So.
Right. I was thinking it was like maybe 10, 11, maybe midnight or something.
Yeah, exactly.
So anyway, she runs into the sheriff and his hunting partner. He ends up taking her back to the cabin, the cottage. And as he's looking around for, you know, she told him that it was Johnny and his three lackeys that were the ones that were, you know, terrorizing. And as he's looking around through the cabin, he starts to spot things. Like, you know, first of all, he notices that there's a whole shitload of alcohol and that there's, you know, empty bottles all over the place. And then as he's wandering around a little bit more, he notices that she was smoking a marijuana cigarette. And so then he starts to accuse her of not only being intoxicated, but maybe leading them on or, you know, kind of playing the game with them.
And the fact there's not anyone there now.
Right.
The house is empty. So did this actually happen, or is she just imagining it because she's been drinking and smoking weed all day?
Right. So
seems to be the sheriff's position on it.
You kind of get, as soon as he finds the, I love the way he calls it a marijuana cigarette.
Yeah, I know. He says it multiple times as well. I find it funny.
He does. He says it at least three or four times. And then I think he even says it again, like, later on in the movie. But you start to get the creeps from him now. And as he's interrogating her, he pushes her up against the wall and he starts frisking her to, you know, check and see if she's got anything else on her. And you get this sense of, like, just gross, because he starts, like, copping a feel on her ass and he starts copping a feel on her boobs. And then
while he's down, like, he crouches down when he's like touches her ass, he then sniffs her ass.
Yeah, that's what I was just gonna say.
Long drawn out sniff. It's fucking creepy as fuck.
So, and just as he's doing that, Johnny and the gang come back in to the cabin. So,
well, just before that, he actually called for backup on his little walkie-talkie radio thing. She said to him, like, back. I think he tells her to get up against a wall, and then he radios in backup, and she says, "What the fuck do you need backup for? Like, it's just us here." And then he does the whole sort of frisking thing, and then they walk in. So obviously, he was radioing them in.
Right.
When he said he was calling for backup, really, he was just calling Johnny and the boys.
Calling them. So Johnny and the gang, they show back up. Now, not only is Johnny and the group harassing Jennifer, but now the sheriff starts harassing her as well. And this, you know, where things were kind of escalating before, this is where the shit really hits the fan. They basically start egging Matthew on, forcing him to rape Jennifer. And as all this is happening, the sheriff gets a phone call from his daughter, Angel, as he calls her. And he totally, you know, like, the switch is flipped, and, you know, he acts like nothing is wrong. He acts like everything is honky-dory, just his day is going, you know, swimmingly well. And, like, you can really see, like, the yin and the yang of the whole situation. And then as soon as he gets off the phone call, he starts pushing on Matthew to rape Jennifer again.
Wait, as if talking to his daughter gave him a second wind.
Almost.
It's weird.
And it's just, it's like, it's so nasty because, you know, even in the original, well, I know there's not a sheriff in the movie, at least in the gang, but so they added that aspect instead of, you know, but there, it's kind of hard to explain. It's like, you know, there are some movies where, like, a rape scene is, you know, it lasts like 30 seconds, but it's such a tough subject to discuss and visualize. Like, 30 seconds feels like 20 minutes. And, you know, I think in the original, the rape scene is a little bit more drawn out. But then when Matthew is finished, they let her go. And she kind of wanders off into the woods. And then they catch up to her.
Well, it's weird because she's walking through the woods. And as she is, she hears a harmonica. And then she, like, walks around a tree. And Andy's just sat against the tree playing the harmonica. So he must have got out of the house, ran ahead of her, got to this tree, then just sat down and started playing it.
Right. Well, they know the woods.
Like, yeah, I guess. It just seemed to be that she went in like a straight line and then he was just already there. It's just, I don't know. There's loads of little things like that in this film where people can just seem to jump around. And like you say, day to night is just like, just happens just like that. People are in one place, then they're in the next. And it's just weird.
So then at this point, they surround her again and they end up stripping her completely naked. And the sheriff now takes his opportunity to rape her. And he says something to her, like they get her on her stomach. And he says he's always been an ass man. And this is hard, you know, because, I mean, obviously he anally rapes her. And it's just, it's, as an actor and an actress doing this, I mean, okay, yes, I got to give you credit for being able to go that far for a role. But, man, how do you go that far for a role? you know what I mean?
You mean the actress that plays Jennifer or the sheriff?
Well, both. I mean, because...
Well, one thing, I some trivia that I read is, so the girl, I can't remember her name, the woman that plays Jennifer, apparently she turned down the role at first, and it took 2 weeks before she actually agreed to it, and that's only because her agent talked her into it. She really didn't want to do it. And another bit of trivia, during this whole kind of section of this film, you know, while she's being ganged up on, being raped or intimidated, like the whole thing, she had a safe word. The actual actress had a safe word on set for if they got too rough with her so she could stop it. So it seems like it wasn't necessarily that scripted. They were kind of allowed to do whatever they wanted or push it as far as they could. Ugh. And then it was down to her to put a stop to it. So, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, because, I mean, bravo to her for being able to do it. But, yeah, I mean, it's, you know, it's brutal.
Fuck her. I think she's just, you know, these fucking actors and actresses that will just do whatever they can to try and make it in Hollywood. They just want an easy life. They want to become famous, and that's it, and they'll do anything to get there. You know, I think that's what it is.
You think so?
Well, if she, yeah, I do.
Okay.
Yeah, I think if she was that serious about her career or whatever, she would have just turned this down and said, "No, I'm better than this."
Yeah. All right.
No, you know, no one needs to play this part.
Well, no, but they did it before, so somebody had to do it again.
Well, yeah, I mean, it takes a special person to do that. Anyone that's acting career is going well wouldn't have played that character.
Right. Yeah, Camille Keaton, I believe, was the original. So after they're done raping her again, she gets up, and again, she wanders off, she's nude, and they're just kind of following behind her. They're just walking behind her, letting her, you know, kind of watching where she's going. And she gets up to this little, like, footbridge, and she's standing there. And, you know, the sheriff says, okay, you know, I'm done with this shit. It's time to end it. So he cocks his shotgun, and she just kind of puts her arms up in the air, or, like, off to the side, like she's being crucified. And she just, you know, falls backwards into the river. And
yeah.
They immediately go running up to the point where she jumped off, or fell off, and she doesn't come back up. So, you know, now the search begins. They, you know, they go downriver, downstream, you know, like a half a mile or whatever, and try and find a body. They go into the swamp and they try to find a body, and they never end up finding her. Now, I know in the original, after a certain amount of time, she actually reappears, and they see her, like, sitting on the beach, you know, like, as she's recovering from the rape. And they don't give a specific time frame that she's been in recovery. But they actually, two of the guys are, you know, they're boating around on the lake that she was staying on. And she's actually sitting there, you know, in the lounge chair on the beach. And they see her, and I think they end up crashing the boat or something like that. But, you know, that's when they know that she wasn't actually dead. And in this one, you know, in a little bit, she actually just pops up. Now, there is a little bit of suspicious stuff going on after, you know, she turns up missing. So we'll get to the suspicious stuff here in a minute. But the sheriff goes home. He's not only does he go home to his daughter, but he goes home to his pregnant wife. So
yeah.
He's married. He has a daughter, and he has another child on the way. And still, he's disgusting enough and inhumane enough, or inhuman enough, to viciously rape this girl.
I was kind of the opinion that, like, the whole thing of having the, like, authority figure, like the sheriff behind it, gives an added level of, like, fear for her, because, you know, normally if you get into a situation, you call the police. If you call the police and they come after you as well, then you're, you know, extra fucked. And I think the thing of having him as, like, a family man is trying to show that, like, you know, it's not just the, like you say, skeezy country boy fisherman guys that are like this. It could also be any normal person with a wife and children as well.
Yeah. You know, and this is one of those things you kind of have to be careful nowadays how you talk about law enforcement. But it just goes to show you that there's always, like, two sides to people. You know what I mean? Like, you've got the one side where he's trying to be a law enforcer, and then you've got the other side, well, I mean, not only a law enforcer, but a husband and a father, and then you got the other side where he's just a complete and utter shithead. And it's just one of those things that, like, I mean, obviously we're dealing, probably not so much over there right now, but we're dealing with the whole, you know, police brutality thing over here in the United States right now. And it seems like every time you look at any kind of social media or news outlet or whatever, it's always, you know, this cop who was normally good did this, which is not good. Or this bad cop, you know, is still bad kind of thing or whatever. I don't want to get into that. But so it just shows you that there's, you know, there's two sides to every story, two sides to every coin, and two sides to people.
Yeah, the only problem I have with this is they did the same thing in the Texas Chainsaw Massacre remake, which came out like 4 years before this. When you had the sheriff, I think it what the sheriff ended up, you had the sheriff throughout the film, and then he ended up actually being part of the family. I think it was the 2006 remake, and then after that they did a prequel when you saw how that character, the brother, actually killed the sheriff and kind of took his clothes and took over.
Oh, yeah, because, yeah, Arlie Ermey ended up shooting the sheriff and killing him, and then took his clothes, and he said he was the new sheriff in town.
Exactly, yeah. But you don't know, you only know, find that out in the prequel, but in the actual remake, I think it was 2006, you don't see any of that. He just turns up as the sheriff.
Right, exactly.
And then you find that, so you think he's the salvation, and it turns out that he's also bad. So, like, this kind of thing had kind of already been done, and, you know, only, like, 4 years before.
Yeah. I wouldn't necessarily say they rip that off. I mean, well, there's probably a ton of movies that it's happened in, but that is...
I don't think they ripped it off. It's not an original idea or anything. Yeah. I mean, the fact that it's a guy that actually is a family man and stuff, I guess, is a bit more original.
Right.
But yeah, having the kind of authority figure that then you think is the salvation that actually turns out being bad isn't necessarily an original idea.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so yeah, no, I see your point. So the game goes on like nothing's happening, and Matthew starts having like flashbacks and like terrors, and like he's seeing things. He's seeing Jennifer like hiding in the woods. And now I know we said that Matthew was kind of mentally disabled, but and it kind of makes you wonder, was he actually seeing her, or was she stalking him, and was he actually seeing her? Or was he having the night terrors? Because I know he was having the flashback, but was he actually seeing her when he started having like the terrors and the nightmares and stuff like that? Or was it just like a hallucination of his guilt, or, you know?
No, yeah, that's it. I was under the impression it was just a manifestation of his guilt, because there is the part where they're all looking for her body in the swamp, and the sheriff's like, we got to keep looking until we find it. But then the others are all like, oh, come on, how long are we going to look for? Like, they don't give a fuck. They don't care if her body turns up, because they've got nothing to lose. Whereas he's a family man, he's got a lot to lose, so he has to look for the body.
Right.
And then it's mentioned at some point when they ask where Matthew is, and one of them says that he's still down there going through the swamp trying to find the body. He won't leave.
Yeah. And I mean, I originally thought it was just, like you said, a manifestation of his guilt. But then as I was talking, going through, I just kind of wondered. So again, the tape now that Stanley was making of the entire rape and the torture and the, you know, the that whole night, it ends up turning up at the sheriff's house. And the sheriff immediately, and I guess I should go back real quick, right after they lost the body and they were searching the swamp, right after Jennifer went missing, you see Stanley and he's kind of switching tapes out of his video recorder. The sheriff gets pissed off at him and tells him to destroy the tape, and then he stomps it into the mud and cracks it up and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Now, Stanley comes back and he says, you know, he's like having a fit. Oh, my fucking tape recorder turned missing, or my video recorder ended up missing. I can't find it. And he confesses that he didn't actually destroy the tape, and that the tape was in his camcorder. So the tape now, of course, shows up at the sheriff's house. And the mother, the sheriff's wife, actually thinks it's the recital from the daughter's ballet recital or whatever it is. But
so they would have, if he didn't get to it first, they would have all sat down and watched it together.
Well, right. And she says, you know, I can't get it to play in our VCR or whatever. It's not the right size. So he asks, she may even say, you know, can you ask Stanley to play it or something like that? But... So, the sheriff, though, when he sees the videotape, because it's just a little micro, you know, a micro VHS tape, he immediately recognizes it as being the tape that was in Stanley's video recorder. And
because Stanley's put a fucking label on it with his own name on it.
Oh,
it says Stanley on the tape.
Yeah, I think it said Stanley Vision. So, he goes, the sheriff leaves the house immediately. And he goes flying out to Johnny's house, or Johnny's trailer, I should say. He tries to force Stanley to eat the tape, because, again, Stanley was there confessing that, you know, the tape he destroyed wasn't the original. And that, so he's forcing Stanley to eat the micro tape. You know, he brings up something about, we gotta find this bitch, I shit you not, whatever, something. You know,
no, so at this point, they think it's Matthew. They think he's gone mad with guilt and he's doing it to fuck with them because he's guilty about what they did to her. I think that they're not convinced that it's her yet.
Oh, right, because, okay, maybe I flip-flopped. Maybe the sheriff hadn't shown up yet, but Johnny at night, and this is where the whole dead bird thing comes back, Johnny's getting harassed with the dead birds being thrown at his window. So, of course, you know, a bird hits the window, he goes out and he looks, and there's a dead bird laying on his porch. So he kicks it off, he goes back inside to finish watching TV and drinking his beer, and then another bird hits the window. So he goes out and he's like, okay, this is fucking weird, you know. He goes back in and he sits down, and then immediately a flip-flop comes flying at the window. And he looks out and he's like, oh, fuck, you know, because this was Jennifer's flip-flop.
And there was, again, this was shown specifically. There was a bit earlier, I think it might have been when she first left the house and ran off before she ran into the sheriff.
Yeah.
She stopped, or I think she fell down, and then she takes them off and leaves them on the ground.
Yep, she
and
takes them flip-flops.
At the time, I thought, why the fuck are they really showing this so much? Why do we really need to see this up close, the fact that she's taken her flip-flops off? But this is why. So when you see the flip-flop now, you recognize it and you know it's her.
Right. Yeah, Chekhov's flip-flop.
Exactly, yeah.
So he goes back inside and he gets his handgun. He sees the bushes move outside. And as he's walking towards the bushes, he looks down and he sees rubber bands on the ground. Now, Matthew, when he got nervous, would snap these rubber bands on his wrist and kind of like calm himself down. It was almost like a fidget spinner, but, you know, it was just a rubber band on his wrist. So now, the tape...
So I think this is why they think it's Matthew. When the tape shows up, they think right. It's Matthew because he found the bands in the bushes, so he thinks it was him at his... Johnny thinks it was him at his place with the flip-flop, and then the tape's gone, so that must have also been Matthew. And he's obviously the guilt's got to him, so now he's trying to get some sort of payback on them by fucking them about.
The tape gets mailed to the sheriff. He goes mental on the gang. Okay, so yeah, I had them written down right. I read them wrong. So now Matthew goes back to Jennifer's cabin. He hears her calling his name. And so he goes into the woods. He wanders into the woods and he hears her. Matthew, you know, come over here, whatever. This is where the abandoned cottage comes back into play.
Yep.
He goes in there, or actually, she appears in front of him, I believe is what happens. And he, like, passes out, or she, anyway. So they go into the cabin. He's like...
Well, you don't see them going, I can't remember if, like you say, he passes out or she knocks him out, but the next thing is him waking up on the floor inside the cabin.
Right, he's waking up, and she's sitting on this nasty, ratty couch, and she's like, she's calling to him. You know, come here, I'll console you, I'll make you feel better. And he starts profusely apologizing to her for raping her. You know, they made me do it, you know, they forced me to do it kind of thing. And she says, I know, it wasn't your fault, I'm not mad at you, I'm mad at them. And then she wraps a rope around his neck and starts strangling him.
This bit's good, actually. I think, like, the performance she puts in of being, like, a, you know, PTSD sufferer.
Yeah.
The whole time, she's just staring straight ahead. He's, like, kneeling on the ground to the side of her, then he gets on the sofa next to her, and she's just staring straight ahead. She's talking to him, but she's just, like, staring. She's not blinking. She's not, you know, no emotion on her face, just staring straight ahead. Like, she can't even turn to look at him. I thought that was quite good, but then that sort of disappears straight after the scene.
Yeah, she goes gangbusters on him. So at this point, as we said, you know, the gang thinks that Matthew is responsible for the tape and for the dead birds and everything like that. So they end up going looking for her.
Sorry, one thing I was just going to say, I can't remember the original that well, but one thing I do remember is that she gets one of the characters in basically the same way. In the original, there is one of the characters who's kind of like got a learning disability, who doesn't really want to join in on the rape, but is kind of coerced into it by the other guys. And she does the same sort of thing to him. I think she actually appears to him, like, by the lake or by the river, completely naked. And then she says the same thing, like, oh, come on, you know, come to me or whatever, I'll comfort you. And then she does that, like, standing up and gets the rope around his neck.
Yeah.
And then she pulls it out and she's got it looped over the tree and actually hangs him over the lake.
She does.
So that was quite a good throwback, for the fact that she does the same thing.
Yeah.
Although, obviously, you don't see her hang him, you don't see what happens, but she gets the rope around his neck. So they did manage to do a little bit of a throwback, at least.
Yeah, I do remember that. Yeah, she does. In the original, she hangs him by the lake. Yeah, but yeah, it is a callback to the original. And then this is where she really starts to get her revenge. Stanley and Andy find the cottage, and Jennifer is standing kind of in the trees a little bit. And Stanley
one thing that I thought was worth mentioning is that when, I think it's Andy goes into the little fucking shack, cottage or whatever, and as he's looking around the rooms, there's a mattress on the floor.
Yes.
That I think's got, it's all dirty and old, but I think may have a pillow on it. So straight, like, he doesn't seem to question it, like, oh, this is just some abandoned cottage. But just by showing that kind of gives you, I mean, it's done quite well without telling you. It kind of shows that this is where she's been sleeping. This is where she's been holed up. So I think it's supposed to be, this is like a month later or something.
Yeah, I think
so. She's been living out here on her own for like a month.
And I think there was a Bible sitting next to the bed too, or the mattress.
Possibly.
Yeah. So Stanley goes around the back and he sees Jennifer kind of standing in the woods. And he starts freaking out, like, oh, you bitch, yeah, I'm gonna fucking get you kind of thing. And as he starts running towards her, or starts walking towards her, he steps into a bear trap and immediately, like, snaps one of his bones, you know, snaps his leg.
Convenient. I mean, that was, how fucking lucky was that he didn't step anywhere else? he happened to step directly into that bear trap. I mean, I don't know, unless she had bear traps all over the ground and we just didn't see them, but you have to assume she only put the one down, but he just happened to step in it.
Dumb luck.
Yeah, lucky her.
But I would think if she had multiples on the ground that, you know, when he fell over, he might have, like, landed on one of those as well and snapped something else.
Yeah.
So Andy now hears Stanley crying, or, you know, whining, and Jennifer sneaks around Andy, cranks him in the head with a bat, and then she walks up to Stanley and cranks him in the head. So now Andy, and I don't know, I this is a callback to the original too, kind of, sort of. Andy is over a tub, and you hear a hose turn on, and she starts filling the tub with water. She goes back out to Stanley now, and he is taped to a tree, duct tape to a tree, and he's kind of sitting down on the ground. And she starts telling him about how, you know, out here in the woods, you have to eat anything to survive. The revenge in this part, I really like him more so than the original. So she's telling him about how, you know, in order to be out here, you have to eat anything to survive. You have to do anything to survive. So she's got a little, like, tote bag with her, and she reaches into it, and she pulls out, like, a skinned rat. And she,
oh, I didn't think it was skinned. I thought it was just dead. But yeah.
Well, it was dead for sure. But she forces the rat into Stanley's mouth. And he immediately spits it up. He barfs all over himself. And then she kind of leaves him and she goes back inside. And by now the tub is almost filled with water. And she, and like we said, Andy is tied up. And I don't know how to describe this without actually seeing it. But, like, he's planking over the tub, I guess. He's got his feet on a chair behind the tub. There's a plank at his waist and a plank at his chest. And she's telling him about, you know, how he's begging for his life, you know. And at this point she's saying, oh, well, you know, I begged, but you didn't give a shit, so fuck you, basically.
Yeah, there's one of them, I can't remember which one it is, but specifically says to her, like, please, please don't do this. And she's like, she says, like, I said please.
I think it was...
You didn't stop.
Well, I think it was both Andy and Stanley.
Possibly. I know that Andy's just, like, after a while, just starts shouting at her and just says, fuck you. And she says, no, you already did that. Now it's my turn to fuck you.
Right.
Yeah, sure.
So she goes back out to Stanley, who's still taped up to the tree, and she's rooting around in her little bag, and she pulls out these fishing line with hooks on them. I love the way they do this. She puts the fish hooks through Stanley's eyelids. And she makes a, you know, a shitty comment about, oh, you know, I heard you like to watch, so watch this kind of thing. And
well, yeah, because she specifically gets his camera and sets it down on, like, a bucket or something in front of him, facing him, and then turns the screen around so it's facing him so he can watch himself.
Right.
And I don't know what that's supposed to have achieved. I don't. She's like, oh, you like to watch, so I'm going to make you watch. And he's like, well, watch what? Watch myself sitting tied to a tree. Like, okay.
So, yeah, she puts the hooks through his eyelids, and then the hooks have string tied to them. So she takes the string, wraps it around the tree, and, like, basically fish hooks his eyes open.
Yeah.
And then, this is so gross. She cuts open a fish, reaches in, pulls out the guts, and smears the fish guts into Stanley's eyes. And that's
all over his face,
got to burn like a motherfucker. But I guess that's probably the least of his worries, I guess, maybe. But so She goes back inside now.
That's one thing, actually, that is good with this bit. The fact that this whole back and forth. Because I think now, like, and obviously they're both in the same. He's outside, Andy's inside. And the fact that she goes between them quite a bit. Both of these things are happening at the same time, I think, is actually quite good.
Yeah.
And I think it's now where she goes back in. And while she's in there with Andy, you can hear Stanley, like, moaning and stuff in the background.
Right. Because his eyelids are open. His eyes are open.
And he's literally just outside. You know, he's just there's no actual windows in this shack, is there? Well, there is windows, but there's no glass. So he's literally just the other side of a wall, basically. So it makes sense that you would hear him. And it's this thing that both of these things are happening at the same time.
Right. So now she reaches into her bag again, and she pulls out a bottle of lye, or a jar of lye, which is, you know, very corrosive. So,
well, this is another thing. Chekhov's lie.
Yeah.
There was a point at the cabin where she was like, I don't know what she was doing. There's like a little shed outside.
Yeah, a little outside.
And she like went and poked her head into the shed, looked at a shelf, and there's just this jar of lye. And she goes, oh, okay.
Yeah.
And then walks off. And what the fuck? What was that about? But now, obviously, oh yeah, because they had to explain it. So why she would have it now? All these little things, like you had to see her take the flip flops off so you recognize them. You had to see the jar of lye so that you recognize it when she has it now. It's just not natural the way these things come up, you know. If the lie was just in the house,
yeah, but I mean,
I just don't know what you saw. The fact that they had to specifically, right, at some point we have to have her go to the shed for what reason?
Because
she needs to see the lie.
Well, she
but
went to
she
the...
doesn't need to go to the shed. Yeah, but we need to show the lies in the shed so that later we can. It's like this film was reverse engineered. They thought about this bathtub death, and we'll have someone in a bath full of fucking corrosive shit. And then we'll burn his face off. Right, how do we do that? Well, how about if it's something like just water with some lye in it? Okay, yeah, brilliant. Where's the lye going to come from? It will just be in the shed at the house. Okay, well, how does she know that it's there? Well, we'll make her go and look in the shed. Why does she need to look in the shed? Well, she doesn't. But we'll make her go there anyway, just so that the audience will see that the lye's in there. It's just so fucking lazy.
But, well, if you remember, though, the door to the shed was banging up against, you know, banging open and closed. That's why she went to the shed.
Okay, I don't remember that.
Oh, okay.
But
yeah.
Sure, let's just say that's the case.
Yeah, well, yeah, she heard the knocking. But, I mean, but exactly like you said, they had to get her into the shed so she could see the lie. And I think there was, like, rat poison there or something else. But, so, yeah, the door to the shed was, like, knocking open and closed. And she heard it, so she went out to investigate. That's when she goes in and she sees the lie. She sees the rat poison and stuff like that. But like you said, Chekhov's lie, you have to, you know, show where it came from to use it later. Because if she just happened to pull out a bottle of lie or a jar of lie for, you know, whatever reason, it really wouldn't make sense. But Andy's tied up over this tub and it's now filled with water. And she starts pouring the lye in, and you can hear it bubbling and sizzling, and like,
well,
you know.
There is a quick bit, actually, before she pours it in. When she comes back into the house, he's actually not been able to hold himself up anymore, and his face is completely submerged in the water.
He just couldn't pop himself up.
So she lifts his head up and says, like, no, you're not drowning yet.
Yeah, you're right. Yep. So, yeah, she says, nope, you're not getting out of it that easily. So
yeah.
She pours the lye in, and you can hear it sizzling and bubbling. Then she pulls the plank from his chest out from under his chest. So now he's basically suspended horizontally over the tub, and he has to keep his, basically from the waist up, suspended over the water, or if he dunks his head in, he's going to melt his face, which ultimately ends up happening. And he goes up and down, what, like 4 or 5 times? And like every time he goes down and then comes back up, his face is like more corroded and more corroded and more corroded. And then eventually, he dunks his head in, and he just stays down there because he can't take it anymore. So after a few minutes of this, Jennifer actually like lifts his head up, and it's basically just flesh and bones. I mean, there's no face left. You know, his lips are gone, his nose is gone, half of his ear was gone. So, you know, job well done on that one. I like that one, that kill, personally. So then the scene cuts back to Stanley outside, and now crows are landing on him. They start pecking at him. They're eating the fish guts, you know, off his face and off his chest. And then you see one just dig right into his eyeball. And then just as it rips it off, the scene cuts. And obviously he's dead now.
Because you do see it pluck the actual eyeball out in some really sort of iffy CGI. But yeah, at some point it just comes back. After Andy's dead, it kind of cuts back to him and you just see him there with no eyes, dead. And I mean, has he died from blindness? or I mean, the crows dig even further into your eye sockets and start digging at your brain. I wasn't sure how he died, or was she leaving him there to starve to death blind now? Was that part of the torture?
Probably a little bit of everything.
Well, I wonder why the crows went for the fish guts that were all over his face and not the whole fish that was on the ground right next to him.
Well, in all fairness, she did chuck it off to the side.
You think that's what the birds would have gone for. But then also I find it funny that she managed to catch the fish in the first place.
Well, she...
I mean, she's... and the rat and whatever else she's been eating the whole time she's been out in the woods for a month. Because she's not... I don't know, unless she's a survival expert and we just didn't know it.
Well,
I know she had like the fishing wire with the hooks, but did she have a fishing rod? Does she know how to fish? The fact that she managed to catch this fish, and you'd assume more than one fish if she's been, you know, feeding herself for a whole month.
Man, you are cynical.
I don't know who writes this stuff.
So Jennifer now somehow gets a car again, and she goes back to the gas station, and she's wearing this really, really short, skimpy skirt.
Yep.
And she pretends like she's filling up her gas tank, but she's got like half of her ass hanging out.
Yep.
Johnny comes up behind her and he starts putting the moves on her again, not knowing it's Jennifer. And just as he gets up to her and says, oh, you know, can I fill you up or whatever, she turns around and has a tire iron in her hand and cranks him across the face, knocks him out.
Yeah.
Now, Jennifer is very small. Somehow she got him, and for the most part, all these guys, into the position of torture by herself. So maybe she
thought the exact same thing, especially Andy propping up those planks of wood across the bathtub and then getting him up on top of it and hog tying him and stuff. Like, how the fuck did she manage that?
Well, maybe
she apparently gets Johnny in the car and then she gets him to the woods. And I mean, you can't drive up to this shack because it's in the middle of the woods, so she'd have to drag his body a certain way, and then she manages to hook him all up with these ropes and stuff.
Maybe in addition to being a survival expert, she also pulled a Sylvester Stallone in Rocky IV and was working out in the woods or in the, you know, the woodshed or the horse barn or whatever it was.
Oh yeah, the director's cut's got a 15-minute training montage.
Yeah, right. So, Johnny is now caught, and he's tied up naked, and he's got a horse bit in his mouth, and she starts telling him, you know, the same thing that he had told her. Show me your pretty teeth. Yeah, I want, you know, you're my show horse, what does she call him, a stud or whatever. And
I think it's a stallion, because not straight away, but because he's like fighting her and saying like, fuck you and all this shit, and she says, oh, you're a stallion, do you know what they, like, I'm going to have to tame you. Do you know what they do to stallions to tame them?
Well, first she pulls out his teeth, like three or four of his teeth, and then...
Yeah, well, I think when she hit him in the face with a tire iron, she smashed him in the mouth, and a few of his teeth are fucked up anyway, because he's already bleeding. I think she mentioned his teeth beforehand. That's like the first thing she says, like, oh, show me your teeth. Oh, yeah, they're not looking good, because they've already been smashed up with a tire iron, and that's when she starts pulling them out.
This is rough. She forces him to now blow his own handgun. And then, like you said, she makes the comment about, you know, do you know what they do to unruly stallions? They castrate them. So she gets these giant fucking gardening shears, and she walks up to him. You see her kind of duck down, and you hear the shears close, and then you hear Johnny screaming bloody murder. And she stands up, and she's got a severed dick in her hand, and she forces it into his mouth, and you hear him, you know, he's gurgling and choking and just having a shitty, shitty time. And then they kind of cut to the floor, and you can see, like, the blood, like, kind of squirting every couple seconds, like, dropping onto the floor. And, you know, and then she just leaves. She turns around, she walks out, and lets him bleed out.
Yep.
And, you know, that, I guess, see, they did kind of do a few callbacks, because in the original, there was a tub scene, but she cut the guy's dick off in the tub. And
I only saw the original once. It was a long time ago. I just remember the whole hanging the guy over the lake. But okay, That's the only bit I really remember.
Well, yeah, in the original, she hangs the one guy. She seduces the second guy in the tub, and then she reaches like off to the side of the tub, and she cuts his dick off underwater. And you actually see, like, the blood spurt, like, through the soap bubbles, which is kind of cool. And then the last two guys, she actually kills on the lake. She buries an axe in one guy's back while he's in the boat. And then the other guy falls off, and then he climbs up to the boat, which is really fucking stupid. He climbs to the back of the boat and, like, is hanging on the motor. And then she just starts the motor up, and the propeller chews up his guts or whatever. So,
right.
Yeah.
That's funny, because that happened in a film that I watched recently, a new film. And I wonder if they got that idea from the original I Spit on Your Grave.
What film is that? What movie is that?
Well, I mean, it come out this year, so spoilers. if I'm gonna give away what the film was, but it was.
Okay, maybe I'll just beep that out.
Yeah, so it's up to you, but yeah, I didn't know that was gonna happen in the film, and it was quite good. But if someone had spoiled it for me going in, then
okay,
it would have lessened it.
I'll just beep that out then.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah, sure.
So anyway, Jennifer now goes to the sheriff's house, and she's acting as the daughter's honors teacher.
But you don't see this from her perspective, do you? It's the sheriff's perspective that gets a phone call from his wife,
right,
saying that the teacher's here, and then she passes the phone over, and then you see that it's Jennifer.
You see that it's Jennifer, and she says her name, Jennifer Hills, and as soon as she says her name, the sheriff starts going crazy again. And he's hauling ass home, and he gets home, and the wife says, oh, well, Mrs. Hills took our daughter to the park to play or whatever. And then, so the cop tears off from home, and he goes to the park immediately, and his daughter's nowhere to be seen. So he goes back to his car, and he does a Dukes of Hazzard slide across the hood. And then as he gets into the car, you see Jennifer's silhouette in the back, and she takes a light or something, like a flashlight, a mag light, and smacks him upside the head and knocks him out.
Yeah.
The next scene, and this one's brutal too, she's back at the cottage again, and she's got the sheriff tied up like over a desk or like a chair or something. And
I think he's kind of bent over
a desk with
a chair behind him.
He's bent over, yeah, like at the waist. And you can see the shotgun kind of like poking out of the back a little bit. You don't really realize what's going on just yet. But she comes up to him and she's explaining that, I got your daughter and whatever, whatever. And then she starts making comments about how she thought he was an ass man and that he would like it. So then she just starts taking the shotgun, and it's already in his ass. But she starts taking the shotgun and like ramming it and ramming it and ramming it and ramming it. Like ripping up his insides with the barrel of the shotgun. And he's obviously like screaming like fucking crazy nuts. And he says, yeah, I'm gonna fucking kill you, blah, whatever. And then she starts talking about Matthew again. And this whole time there's a chair in the corner of the room, and it's got like a blanket draped over the top. And at this point she goes and she lifts the blanket up, and I first thought it was going to be his daughter, but she takes the blanket off of the chair, and it's actually Matthew, and he's still passed out. She ties a string around Matthew's wrist, and then she runs the string up and then back down like a little hook or whatever, and it's tied to the trigger of the shotgun. And
the fact that it's tied to the actual trigger, it's just like a little loop around the actual trigger, and she's pulling this string around the room with it attached to the trigger. I don't know what she's done to stop it from, just stop the trigger from moving. Maybe, but like, this is so precarious.
Maybe the safety was on. We'll go with that. So
yeah.
So she gets down real close to the sheriff, and she whispers, you know, this is Matthew. I hope you can stop him from moving when he wakes up, because he's gonna pretty soon, and you pretty much know what's gonna happen. So she ends up leaving, and sure enough, just as soon as she leaves the scene, Matthew wakes up, and he sees the sheriff there, and he makes a comment like, "Sheriff, what are you doing?" or whatever. And he lifts his wrist, or he goes to get up or something. And she's sitting outside, like on a tree branch or something, and you hear the shotgun go off. And then she just kind of gets this smile on her face, and everything is honky-dory. And then they go back inside, the camera does, and you see the sheriff, and he's like missing like his lower jaw.
Well, I think you see Matthew first, and you see that Matthew's got like a hole in his chest.
Oh, right. Yeah. So,
Matthew, obviously, the shotgun shot through the sheriff and then hit him as well. But you kind of think for a second, like, oh, they're only showing Matthew. They're not going to show the sheriff. But then it does come back. The camera does come around to the sheriff.
Camera pans back to the sheriff, and he's missing. Like, his mouth is blown off, and like his lower jaw or something like that. And then the credits roll. She actually does. She drives off, I think. Like, you see her driving away from town or whatever. But anyway, so...
I don't remember seeing that, yeah.
So, that's the end of the movie. I don't know, man. You know, obviously, you said you haven't seen the original in years, but story plot holes to the side, I think I almost like this one just a little bit better than the original.
See, something I'll say is I was texting a couple of friends, told them I was watching this.
Uh-huh.
And then, at the end of it, I texted them and said, yeah, I finished it. What a shit film. was my exact words. So I think, very different opinion to what you had. But then, I guess, was this you watching it for the first time?
No, I've seen it like two or three times prior to this.
All right. Well, the fact that you still like it surprises me.
All right.
Because I was not a fan at all.
Okay.
Well, I don't think I was necessarily a fan of the first time, because that was like 10 years ago that I watched it, and I didn't watch it again. So
yeah.
All
right. Well, don't forget, you picked this movie, so...
Yeah, and I did, and the reason I picked it is because I remembered it being violent. I remember the whole rape scene being really, really unsettling.
Okay.
And that was the thing that stood out to me. Like, I remembered the whole rape scene and the whole leading up to it, the whole intimidation, everything, being really, really unsettling to the fact that you really kind of felt for the character, felt for Jennifer.
Right.
And that was kind of what I had in mind. And watching this back now, like, yeah, that is the case. It goes on for way too long.
It does. Well, so does the original.
And it just keeps building and building. Like, it starts off, they come into the house, and one of them's got their underwear. And then you've got, like, one of them, like, Johnny says, oh, we just want you to have a drink, and then we'll go. And then she's like, oh, I don't want to have a drink. And he's like, well, the bottle's out, and it's open, so you've clearly been drinking it.
Right.
And then he's trying to get her to drink it. You've got Andy there flicking lit matches at her the whole time. She's like making excuses, saying her boyfriend's coming, and it's just so much stuff happens, and it builds up, and it's just getting worse and worse and worse for her. And then finally she gets away, but then they meet the sheriff, and then it comes back, and then it carries on, and the sheriff starts harassing her. Like, the sheriff at one point moves her by wedging his shotgun between her legs and kind of lifting it up and ushering her across the room.
Yeah, I remember
that. And it just keeps building up and building up, and obviously Matthew rapes her, and then she goes away and they catch up to her. But while the sheriff's raping her, one of them, I can't remember which one it is, it's like her face is over a puddle, it's like holding her face under the water in the puddle, and at the same time as all this is happening, like, it's just, and it all stays with her, and it's fucking savage. And I mean, to the point, it's too much. I think it's literally too much that I think they're glorifying it.
Okay.
Is a problem I have with it. I think the director was sat here going, yeah, this would be, I fucking wish I was one of these guys, I wish I was fucking gang raping someone like this. That's the only way I can see it. It's so over the top. It goes on for so long. There's so much detail in it. Someone was fucking getting off to this originally.
Yeah.
And there is the argument to be made that they had to make it really brutal so that when she comes to get in her revenge, it feels justified.
It feels justified, right.
But if that was the case, like, this whole thing with her, like, half the film is her being attacked.
Right.
She gets all these other five individually, and each one lasts like 5 minutes. If it was going to be justified, that they should have got just as much torture as she went through. The fact, like, that bathtub kill is kind of iconic because it's an original idea, but original doesn't necessarily mean good. In terms of the amount of torture she went through, like, the amount of time she was being tortured for, he only had 5 minutes.
Yeah,
you know, Stanley only had 5 minutes, had his eyes pecked out. Johnny had even less than that, and then the sheriff had like, what, 30 seconds of having the shotgun rammed up his ass, and then he was shot. It all happened so quickly, and it's just like, that doesn't work. That doesn't balance out with the amount that she put up with. I get the impression that the director, the producers, whoever, were really fucking into watching this woman get fucking tortured and raped.
Yeah.
And they weren't that interested in seeing her actually get her revenge. They just wanted that to be quick and over with. They were more interested in the rape.
Huh.
And that's what annoys me about this film. I just think it's really, to the point that they're just glorifying it. The rape is just too glorified. If each of these people, when she got her revenge, if each of these deaths were a bit more violent or
involved,
a bit more dragged out,
yeah,
then, yeah, exactly. I think, okay, that kind of balances out. But the fact that they're all kind of off just pretty quickly, and there's not a lot of screen time given to those deaths, just makes it feel really unbalanced. The fact that I think they're just glorifying the original attack on her, the whole intimidation and the, you know, the rape and all of it.
Okay, wow.
That's what, like, now I just can't help but watch this film and think this is just an advert for rape.
All right, well,
that's what it is.
Okay. Well, with all that said, then, what is your gore score based on violence and gore out of 10? And keeping in mind that Evil Dead 13 is a 10.
Yeah, I heard that actually when I listened to your Terrifier episode, yeah. Which you also gave a 10, but I haven't seen.
Right.
Nah, I mean, it's probably pretty low.
Yeah.
In terms of gore, I mean, if you're going for violence, yeah, it's pretty violent. And I think the whole kind of the psychological torture for her, I think, is the worst part, more so than the physical. But in terms of the gore, I mean, the eyes being pecked out, I mean, you only kind of briefly see it.
Okay.
The, low. I'm going to put this really low. I don't know, like a 3?
Well, the gore score includes violence and gore, or gore and violence. So,
okay.
Does that make you... if a 3 is fine, I just, you know...
Yeah, no, if you're going to include the violence as well, I'd put it higher. But I think more of that, the higher score is to do with the violence that's done to her, not what she does to the...
Right.
Not what she does to them. Because even like, the thing of getting his eyes pecked out, you don't see much of that. You don't see much actual gore. It's all implied, really.
For the same
with Andy in the bath. Yeah. You see him going under the water, and then you see his kind of like bleached skull face afterwards. But you don't see it actually happen as such.
I think
but Johnny, you see the blood on the floor. Seeing the teeth pulled out, I guess, is quite bad. But like, you see the blood on the floor, but you don't really see. And then the same with the sheriff. You don't even see the gun go off. You just see the aftermath of it.
Yeah, I think it would have been pretty cool if they had a camera under the water, like actually in the tub, and every time his head went under, you actually saw like more and more of his face melt off. That would have been kind of sweet.
Yeah, no, that would have been good. The problem is that would have been a good idea, and these filmmakers didn't have many good ideas. Like I say, I think they came up with, like, I don't think they went, right, let's make a remake of I Spit on Your Grave. They just come, some random idiots sat in a room, just thought of, like, what would be a weird way to kill someone in a film? How about a bathtub filled with lye? All right, yeah. How about have someone's dick cut off and shoved in them? Yeah, okay, right, let's make a film out of this. What can we do? Like, I think they started with that, and they reverse engineered it. And then everything else was just rushed out to try and make it into a plot, which is why it doesn't necessarily flow the way the film should.
All right. Your new nickname is Gaz the Cynic.
That's fun. The thing, you say that, though, but like that's only the case
okay.
with shit films. Like, I could talk up good films all day.
All right. No, that's fair. I'm just busting you. So, okay, your overall score, then, out of 10, what would you give this overall?
Probably, obviously, it's like,
not going to be very high.
2 or 3. I don't see any reason to recommend it to anyone. And I mean, I think the filmmakers, you know, should be looking into them.
Yeah.
Because I think they probably enjoyed this a bit too much.
Okay.
I wouldn't rate it highly. I couldn't imagine ever saying to someone, oh yeah, you should watch I Spit on Your Grave. But if someone asked me what it was like, if someone said to me like, oh, you know, I thought about watching 2010's I Spit on Your Grave, what do you think? I'd say, nah, don't bother.
All right. Fair enough.
I can't rate it highly. What would you rate it? Obviously, you said you prefer it to the original, so.
No, overall, for the gore score, I think I would, I mean, for gore and violence, like you said, it's not really that gory, but it definitely is violent. So I would put it at about a 5.5, 6 as far as violence. And then my overall rating, I don't remember what I gave the original, but I would put this maybe at around like a 6.5. I don't know. I mean, I like it. I'm a fan of the gore and stuff like that. So if we would have seen a little bit more, but like you said, if we would have seen a little bit more, or they would have spent a little bit more time on each of the revenge kills, it would have been a lot better. But even in the original, they didn't spend a whole lot of time. I mean, there was definitely more time with the rape than there was with the kills or the revenge. And I think that's probably the reason that they did it on this movie. You know, just, again, paying homage to the original. Had they made them a little bit more drawn out and more revengey, then, yeah, it probably would have been, you know, a little bit higher in terms of both the gore score and the overall score. But, yeah, so, I mean, I liked it. I didn't dislike it. I haven't seen part 2 or part 3. Of the more recent series, but overall I liked it. You know, I would recommend it.
Yeah, I was going to say, I did see that there were sequels, which really surprised me. But I looked up the sequels, and the second one is apparently a completely like a standalone film.
I think it is.
It doesn't have any continuity with this at all. It's set in like a different country. It's set in Romania or something. But
yeah.
Then the third one, I Spit on Your Grave 3, is a direct sequel to this film, where the character of Jennifer, played by the same actress again, goes to like support groups for women suffering with PTSD from rape and then hunts down and kills the rapist.
Yeah, she's almost like a vigilante.
Yeah, that's a completely different type of film, which doesn't need to exist, I don't think. I mean, that film can exist, but as a sequel to this, I just don't think really plays.
So, all right, well, okay. I'm kind of surprised we vary so much on it, but, I mean, that's fine, totally fine. but go ahead
well,
and give...
Be fair, I mean, like, if everyone liked the same stuff, only one type of film would ever get made.
Yeah, that's
so
true.
People have got to have different opinions. One thing I wanted to say about this, though, is that I think it would work better as a series. Not necessarily like 10 episodes, but maybe like a 3-4-part TV drama or something.
Uh-huh.
And have a bit more backstory for the characters. A bit more backstory with the sheriff, because we just have to assume, did this sheriff just turn sadistic this night, or was he like this and had he done this shit before?
Right.
The fact that he called the boys in, when he said he was calling for backup and he just called Johnny and that, he was obviously chummy with them. Did he know what they were up to? Had they all done this before? Is there another pile of bodies somewhere from where they've done this? Like, all that could have been done with being fleshed out.
Yeah.
And then the whole thing with her getting her revenge, the fact that she goes from Matthew to Stanley and Andy to Johnny, and it's like, there's no in-between. She's missing for a whole month, but then we don't see any of that month. But then everything else she does, we see it all duh, 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 one after the other.
Right.
Where I think if that was all spaced out and you saw her, a bit more of her living alone for that month or what she was doing, maybe she did disappear and start like trying to go home, but then she didn't. She couldn't face her family or something. So then that's why she decides to go back and get the revenge. Or actually seeing a bit more of the PTSD. Like the thing with when she's with Matthew on the sofa and she's just staring blankly straight ahead, like she's not, it's like she's not even a real person anymore.
Right.
By the time it comes to Stanley and Andy, she's like talking to them and she's moving around fine. And then when she is pretending to be the sheriff's daughter's teacher, she's like a completely different person. She's got clothes on, she looks all nice, she's got her hair done, she's got her makeup done and stuff. And it's like, well, where did that personality change come from? If she was truly suffering from PTSD, she wouldn't have just been able to do that at the drop of a hat. There should have been a bit more in between to pad out and show how she got from one place to another or from one mental state to the next or how these decisions were made or how the characters become who they were. I think that would work and that would be much more interesting. Obviously, that's not what they were going for. They were going for brutality and violence.
Right. Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, you definitely bring up some points. But yeah, like, I don't know, man. I just, not the originality, obviously, because it was a remake, but as far as like, well, I don't know. We've debated it, I think, long enough, but.
Yeah.
No, go ahead. Well, go ahead and give your podcast another shout out. Let us know where we can find you. Let us know where we can listen to you and all that good jazz.
Yeah. If you're interested in Bloodshed, you can find us, you know, every podcast provider. We're there. Just search The Bloodshed at The Bloodshed Podcast, because that's the only social media we use where we're, you know, all the podcast news will be there.
Obviously, you know, Gaz, I want to thank you for coming on the show. As my first Insta guest for my most vile movies you can think of that you have to come on and discuss. But I don't know, you know, it's cool that we differed because, like I said, it did lead to some awfully good discussion. And, you know, overall, I had a blast. You know, I got to watch a movie that I enjoyed. It's not the greatest movie, but it's certainly not the worst movie. You know, if you're listening to this podcast, you obviously know where to find us. You can find us on Instagram at @XHR_podcast. We are on Twitter, but I don't really use that much. But we're on Twitter at Horror Replay. We do have a Facebook page. I should just shut that down because I don't even, Facebook sucks. So, I mean, you know, you can find us on Stitcher, Google Podcast, Apple Podcast, Spotify, etc., etc., etc. Tell your family, tell your friends, go listen to the Bloodshed Podcast with Gaz and, is it Laura?
Yep.
Yeah.
Me and Laura.
With Gaz and Laura. You know, give them a follow. Look them up on Instagram. Give them a follow. I mean, that's all I got for today, guys. So, Gaz, thank you again for being my first Insta guest. Thank you for picking the movie and coming on to discuss it with me on the Extreme Horror Replay. I appreciate it.
No problem. If it happens again, hopefully it'll be a better film.
Well, better for you. I still enjoyed it. So
yeah, better for me.
But so go ahead, be good to each other, and we will talk to you later. Gaz, over and all, you know, fuck that ending up. yes, let's try that again. So go ahead, be good to one another. Gaz, thank you again for coming on the show. I really appreciate it. And
thanks for having me.
Yeah, we will talk to you all later. So peace out. Bye, y'all.